So it basically takes two things to make thunderstorms in the Gulf of Alaska.
We have cold air aloft, and we still have a relatively warm sea surface temperature.
This is Joel Curtis, the warning coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Juneau. I reach him at his desk just as he's issuing the day's aviation forecast. Curtis was a navigator on C-130s in the Air Force. He spent a lot of time flying around storms then. But sometimes planes and lightning share the same airspace, making strikes a bit more likely.
The aircraft on approach is a fairly low level, and the charge difference between what's going on in the cloud and on the ground is probably a little bit greater in that zone where the aircraft is.
That two Alaska Airlines jets were struck within a few hours of each other doesn't seem like such a remarkable coincidence when you realize how much lightning was happening from Sunday evening to Monday evening. 396 strikes total, mostly on the outer coast and over the Gulf, according to new detection equipment in use by the National Weather Service.
It's light years. I mean, so far ahead of what we used to have about 2 years ago that we're able to watch all this oceanic lightning that we really never had a handle on before.
Curtis says the lightning detection system is proprietary to the manufacturer, but relies on triangulation to pinpoint lightning. He saw strikes as far inland as Glacier Bay on Monday, but no farther since the water toward the mainland side of southeast Alaska is colder. But is this unusual weather? Not at all.
I have to tell you that this is the climatological time of year that we see the most lightning. And in fact, this is the time of year that a few of us get to experience thunder snow.
Yep, thunder snow. Curtis says the storms that produce the most lightning also produce a very specific kind of precipitation. There's a Doppler radar on Bjorka Island in Sitka Sound that sees rain, snow, and everything in between.
And when I see a type of ice pellet called grapple.
Grapple is a tiny droplet of water that is rimed in ice, not hail, not really snow. And grapple is behind a lot of the lightning in southeast Alaska.
They're not all that big. The water molecules are attaching themselves to this, and of course, water being bipolar there with a, you know, couple of nice charges on it, you know, really sets up a charge difference between it and the ground.
Bang, lightning.
Yeah, well, you get enough of that and that stuff's being thrown up and down. That's what really sets the charge going, and the next thing you know, then you have to have a discharge.
But, of course, none of this matters if you're waiting in an airport. Sitka librarian Carrie Sagel boarded the replacement aircraft sent up from Seattle to continue Flight 62. Sagel says she finally got on the plane about 5 hours behind schedule, and the misadventures continued.
And so much time went by that we had to de-ice, we had to wait for a plane to land, and finally made it to Ketchikan. When we made it to Ketchikan, however, they were trying for a quick turnaround. We left the gate. We taxied away. We taxied for an extremely long time. We seemed to do a 180, and soon we were back at the gate. They deplaned some passengers. The little boy refused to sit and be seatbelted.
The boy and his father were left behind in Ketchikan. I reached Sagel as she waited for a lift from cousins at the Cedar Rapids, Iowa airport. This was the first time in 23 years she's gone home for Christmas. A journey she won't soon repeat.
I will be in Sitka next year for the holidays.
Despite all the unexpected complications, Sagel reports that Alaska Airlines handled the circumstances Monday with great style. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.